Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I am Jesse Lowry, Conservation Manager, and in the next half hour, we'll be talking with John Swanson. He's the Watershed Coordinator at Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. I always like to, at the beginning of the show, take a few minutes to set the stage and talk about the role of accredited zoos in saving wildlife and helping with environmental protection. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And what I like to call it is actually a window to the wild. It's a place where we invite the community and schools and families to come in, have a fun, affordable day out, and see some animals that maybe they wouldn't have a chance to see in their lifetime. Look into the eyes of a snow leopard and see the amazing agility of sea lions, and feel that sense of awe that we all feel when we see these beautiful creatures. But as a zoo and as a conservation manager, it's our goal, and we're motivated to turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, some kind of behavior change that we can make in our own life that is actually going to make a difference to imperiled wildlife populations around the world. And so that's why we want to help incite behavior change. We've got an audience of almost 500,000 people a year, so we've got a great opportunity and I think a responsibility to help create that change. And the zoo works on conservation in a multitude of ways. First of all, we try to make our day-to-day operations as green as possible. I think there's kind of a false disconnection between being green and saving animals. It's actually the same thing. Activities and using of disposable plates and forks and straws have a direct effect on local wildlife. We work to be a leader in local conservation as well. One example is our Plant Grow Fly Pollinator Conservation Project, and we'll talk a little bit in a few minutes about how we partner with John and his organization on that project. You can go to plantgrowfly.com to find out everything you need to know on how to plant a butterfly garden in your yard that will support bees and butterflies. And we also work on the Upcycle campaign, where we go into local parks around central Iowa and remove invasive plant species like honeysuckle and mulberry, which just so happens to be a favorite tree item of our giraffe and rhino. So everybody wins. Really, the backbone of what a zoo can do to help save animals is to support field conservation. Those organizations and individuals that are out on the front lines in the range countries of some of the animals we have here at the zoo, working to save them in the wild. And we give about $70,000 per year to in the wild conservation. Some examples is International Rhino Foundation, Giraffe Conservation Foundation, Hornbill Research Foundation, Conservation Fusion, which works in Madagascar, and that's how we can really make a difference to the lives of some of the exotic species that we have. And an important point that I like to remind folks is that the way that we fund all of these projects is a portion of all revenue at Blank Park Zoo goes to save animals in the wild. So it doesn't matter if you just come here on a warm Saturday, or if you buy an ice cream cone, or you ride the train, you are helping to save animals in the wild. And so we could not do this without the support of the community. I'll kind of loop back, though, to local conservation. I really think that if you want to get the most bang for your buck in saving animals and helping the local environment, you should think global and act local. It's cliche, but it's definitely true. And we're very honored to partner with John Swanson, his entire crew in Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. We've worked with them for many years now. And welcome to the show, John. We're really excited to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jesse. Excited to talk a little bit about our local projects and the fun stuff going on right here in Des Moines and around the county.
Wonderful. Let's start by, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your organization? What are some of its goals?
Sure. So I work for Polk Soil and Water Conservation District, and we often joke that we are the conservation group. Nobody knows who we are or what we do. But in the simplest form, we work with people to improve water quality. And we work with farmers, landowners, private homeowners, cities, and really everyone with the end of the day to see how many projects we can get built on the ground to slow down runoff, clean that water, and reduce flooding. As an agency, we work countywide, both in, like I said, the urban and agricultural areas. We've been around since the Dust Bowl era. The Soil and Water Conservation District was first created in response to the Dust Bowl. So we had huge, massive erosion happening across the Midwest. And we had government programs that were created to work with farmers to fix these issues. In an effort to connect these government programs with these local small farmers, the Soil and Water Conservation District was created to get projects on the ground. Now, luckily, we don't have a Dust Bowl anymore, but we do have our own modern-day issues that we're still trying to correct.
It sounds like you have an amazing role as a facilitator. You can see some of the problems that are happening out in the community with water quality, and you can find the right expertise, the technical assistance, the financial assistance that folks need to get some projects going.
Yep, some great points. Spending a lot of time out in the field. Again, if you're not outside, you're not seeing what's happening out there, you can't fix the problems. And then people can't always fix the problems on their own. You'd like to say, if this problem is happening on my property, if water quality is being polluted from my property, I'd like to fix it. But what if you don't have enough money? What if it's too expensive? That's, again, where we come and help. We come and find out what can we do to fix it, and are there funds available that maybe we can work with you to fix those problems?
Well, let's talk about those very things. Let's start with what are the problems that you guys are facing here in the local community?
Yeah, so it's here in the Des Moines area, it's kind of a microcosm of the whole state. We have agriculture, we have urban, we have streams, we have lakes, we have a little bit of everything, and pollution's on the same wavelength there. In the agriculture areas, we're looking at some of those hot topics you're hearing about, nitrates in our water, Des Moines Water Works providing drinking water for the Des Moines area. In the urban areas, we have erosion happening, just like in the ag area. So we have soil washing into our lakes and streams, dirtying the water. We have really a variety of things, from chlorides, from street salts that are put on in the winter, flowing into our urban streams, to even lawn fertilizers, agricultural fertilizers. But really all comes back to a couple common themes. The water is running off of the land and it's running into a stream, a river, or a lake. And wherever that water is running from, it carries some type of pollutants. So we go up onto the land and say, what type of pollution's in this water in this specific spot, and how do we fix it? So it's very localized. Even within Des Moines, Polk County, the issues you have in West Des Moines are not the same as in Des Moines, that aren't the same as north of Ankeny in the farm fields. So very localized, but really soil in our water, nutrients, and then things from yards, streets. We have a little bit of everything.
Okay. So let's back up for a moment and just talk about what kind of problems all of these pollutants are causing. Why is clean water important? And I'm sure that it's having effects not just in Iowa, but downstream as well.
As a kid, you want to be able to go down in the water. As a kid, I played in the Four Mile Creek in the heart of Des Moines. So really looking at what type of pollutants can affect human health. Things like bacteria in our water, from human waste, pet waste, cattle. Trying to address that is one of our top priorities, to make sure the water is safe for people to get into. And then you think about, what about what's living in the water? If you're a fish, you have gills, you're breathing water, you need oxygen in your water. We want to make sure our water is properly oxygenated. If our streams are so dirty and murky with soil, sunlight's not penetrating, vegetation's not growing, we have less oxygen in the water. So looking out for our plants and critters that are living in the water. And then finally, protecting our infrastructure. We have roads, we have houses. Like I said earlier, people call us oftentimes when they have problems on their property. Sometimes we come up and there's a house that's 5 feet away from falling into a 10-foot deep stream. Those are problems as well. And what more way do you notice water quality? It's soil in the water. Well, that soil is coming from somewhere. Is it washing away, coming towards the house? Protecting those households, protecting people's land is definitely another priority of ours.
It's really a common theme that we hear throughout many different conservation practices and organizations, that what's good for the environment and our natural resources is also good for humans, is also good for wildlife. I know a lot of the rain gardens you put in are especially great for pollinators, which really starts to put back those building blocks of the ecosystem that we've lost with all kinds of development. But why don't you talk about some of the solutions to some of these problems? What are some of the things that we can do to help?
Yeah, so maybe starting in the urban areas, what can a homeowner do to improve water quality? When we think about your own property, that's where you want to start. Where is your water coming from? And when it leaves your property, where is it going? And the majority of houses I visit, if you look at the property, it's all going to drain into a street, and it's going to go right into a curb storm sewer system. And then you have to keep in mind that that storm sewer, once that water reaches it, is going to be piped right to a stream. No matter where you are in Iowa, that pipe is going to a stream or a lake. So what can we do to stop that water? What can we do to slow it down and infiltrate it into the ground? Because 200 years ago, before people came here, all of our water soaked into the ground and was naturally cleaned by prairie plants, by soil, and then it slowly worked its way through the ground into the groundwater. So we want to try and mimic that in our urban areas. Now, you would say, well, why don't we bring back the prairie? And I've tried that. I say, we should just tear these houses down and build a prairie. Well, again, you have to meet the local needs of the people and the needs of the water. So a resource like a rain garden is really a great first step. Now, a rain garden in its simplest form is really a shallow depression that you build near a downspout where you have water coming off of your house, or where you have a wet area in your yard, where anywhere you have water collecting could be a spot for a rain garden. This rain garden, once you design it, you plant it full of native prairie plants that are going to have deep roots, 5 to 10 foot deep, and it's going to capture that water and send it down in the ground, cleaning it, slowing down the amount of water coming down to it. Another, maybe the simplest thing a person could do, as far as practices go, is looking at your soils. In a lot of our newer houses, the topsoil has been removed. During the construction of the home, the clay subsoils are simply better for foundations. And unfortunately, in many cases, the topsoil does not get put back on. So what you're left with is compacted clay soils with turf grass sitting on top with about 2 inches of roots. And we found these soils soak in about the same amount of water as concrete, basically none. So we have a practice called soil quality restoration. And we've actually done over 50 of these in the last year, mostly around Easter Lake, where we have a restoration project going on. But this practice, they simply come in, the contractor aerates the yard, which a lot of people have done already, pulling out plugs, putting little holes in your soil. And then we spread about 3/4 of an inch of black rich compost. Now, this compost comes from Metro Waste Authority here in the metro, and it's broken down plant, leaves, sticks, and goes through a process. And this black, fluffy compost is very high in nutrients. And it can take what takes hundreds of years to build topsoil. This compost can actually do it with a one-time application. You spread it over your yard. It does turn your block for about 10 days. It scares a lot of people. But after that 10 days, your grass grows up through it. You're left with a greener, lustered lawn. And you're left with a jump start of creating new topsoil. You're left with a yard that now can soak in water rather than letting it run off. But I wouldn't stop without saying, as a homeowner, thinking about pollution prevention. What type of pollutants could be coming off of your yard? Because when you think about it, when I think of my own lawn in the city of Des Moines, what types of pollutants could be running off? Things people don't think about, things like dog waste. Again, down in Easter Lake, we had bacteria in the lake. And we did some tests. What kind of bacteria is in the lake? Through some of these tests, we said it's actually from dogs. So we took a step further. How many dogs lived in the area that drained down to Easter Lake? Almost 9,000 dogs. That's a lot of dogs. So we take a step further. If I'm going to tell people they need to pick up their dog waste, why? As a conservationist, I need to understand what's the issue with the dog waste. You go out there, do some research. You find out dog poop has some of the highest bacteria of any animal in Iowa. And if you leave it in your yard, it then washes off into your storm sewer and then it's transported right to a river, stream, or lake. And you think, well, it breaks down. It's going to go in soil. If you look at it, again, I know way too much about dog waste. It actually becomes a higher count in bacteria the longer it sits on the ground. That's an easy pollution prevention.
And 9,000 dogs.
9,000 dogs. How about washing your car? You think, I want to be environmentally friendly. I want to wash my car at my house. Well, if you're in your driveway and you wash your car, those suds are going to wash into the street. They make it to that storm sewer. They're now going right to our rivers and streams. So if you do wash it at your house, wash it in your yard where it can soak into the ground. And then maybe the last one, the one people don't think about, and I tell this to kids a lot, the worst pollutant that can come off of urban lawns, actually grass clippings. When you think about your mowing your yard that last pass, if those grass clippings are blowing out into the street, they're going to wash to our storm sewer and go to rivers and lakes. And again, I was out for the past couple of years talking to a lot of groups, a lot of neighbors associations telling them about this. And people would ask me, well, how many grass clippings really go into our rivers and streams? And unfortunately, I would say, well, I don't really know.
A lot,
obviously. But as a conservationist, you want to say, to fix this problem, I really have to understand it. So down around Easter Lake, we put in some storm sewer nets. move them around to different areas in the watershed that captured close to 99% of solids that went into the storm sewer. And what we found is we moved it around, and in an average 2 to 3 week period in the summer, we could have upwards of 50 pounds of grass clippings coming into a single storm sewer. And those grass clippings are packed full of nutrients like phosphorus, same things that are in fertilizers. So if these grass clippings are allowed, in this case 50 pounds from a single storm sewer, it's similar to dumping fertilizer right into the stream. So you have to think about these small things on a daily, day-to-day basis that are happening on your property. Are they leaving your property and are they making it to a stream? And simply bag your clippings, blow your grass clippings back into your yard. That's really all you need to do to fix it.
You gave some really concrete, easy, practical behavior changes that folks can do in their own yard. I'd like to hear how you guys are getting that message out, and how are these homeowners taking this new knowledge, and how much success have you had with people changing the practices they do around their lawns and their homes?
So one of my favorite success stories would be the Easter Lake Watershed Project, a project that I spent a few years as the watershed coordinator for. Now we have a new gal, Julie Peralt, that's working on that. But down there, we have this large lake restoration where the lake's actually drained right now. They're deepening the lake. They're fixing it. They're fixing the stream that comes down to it. But as a part of our watershed plan that said, to fix Easter Lake, you have to do these things. One of them said, we have to slow water down and clean it before it dumps into the lake, because we had about a dozen of those storm sewers dumping right into the lake. So we said, all right, we're going to go out and we're going to work with homeowners. And we knew if we wanted enough people to do this, maybe we needed to help them pay for it. So we developed a cost share program through several grants with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and other agencies. And we said, if you folks build these rain gardens, do these soil quality restorations, if you plant native plants, we'll help you pay for it. And in about 4 years, we had over 150 homeowners come out and say, yes, I want to protect Easter Lake and I want to do these things. But again, this had never been done in Iowa before. We'd never had so many homeowners installing practices. So from day one, we said we wanted to answer the question, can homeowners make a difference in their local lake in this case? So what we did is we worked with the DNR and we installed a flow meter. We installed a flow meter and water quality data, and we measured from a targeted neighborhood that we were going to go door to door and try to install as many practices as possible. Will it make a difference in how much water is dumping into the lake? And we said, if we see reduction in how much water, that means that it's got to go somewhere. It's going down into the ground. We paired that with another watershed where we said, we're not going to install any practices, and we'll see how big of a difference we can make. And did that for a couple years. And what we found is that in 2 years of working with homeowners, now these were not done in the streets, the city knew this was all done by homeowners, we saw almost a 40% reduction in flows to the lake.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. I would say, even myself, I was saying, I don't think we're going to make a difference. I think we got to look at all this street water. I don't think that we're going to be able to see a difference. And what did it tell us? It said homeowners can make a difference in their local lake. They can slow water down. They can treat it. They can clean it. And it's going to go hand in hand with this big lake restoration. And really proved to me, hey, homeowners can make a difference. Let's keep this going. And I've been excited to see that this cost share program that we developed down in Easter Lake is now being kind of utilized in several communities. City of Des Moines has just released their own cost share program for any resident in Des Moines. Johnson has similar programs, the city of Waukee, and there's more online that are going to be coming in the next year or two. So I urge you as a homeowner, call your city, look up on their website, look for stormwater management cost share. Is it available? And they could help you pay for it, because it's important.
And I always like to say, everybody can just start where they are and do what they can. We can't all drive Priuses and do everything exactly right all the time, but one homeowner might be able to put in a rain garden. Another one will just simply be able to stop throwing the grass clippings in the street, and everybody together adds up to a huge impact. And it's the same thing with a lot of different, you know, green issues.
And I'll also add, in Iowa, we hear so much about farming, and then people say, well, the farmers are polluting the water. I would say it's not an ag issue. It's not an urban issue. It's really everyone's issue. Everyone is playing a part in water quality. And these same things we're doing with homeowners, we're out doing daily with farmers. Right, we have staff that go out and we have these same conversations and say, on your farm, what can you do to improve water quality? But we don't want to forget our urban areas, especially in the Des Moines Metro. There's pollution coming off these urban areas, and homeowners, residents of these metro communities, you can help too. And it's really, everyone's going to have to do a part to fix kind of our diverse issues here in Iowa.
Talk a little bit about some programs that are available to folks in the agricultural community.
Sure. So again, it's looking at specific properties. Just like when I come out to a homeowner's property, what I do with a neighbor might not work for you. And then the same goes in the farming community. What one neighbor is doing may not work for the next farming operation. And it kind of compounds when you look at it's a business. It's a business that's looking to profit, make a living, feed people. So how can we utilize what the farmer is doing and maybe bring in new technology, bring in new methods, or how can we build new practices? So a good example with the nitrate issue is farm tiles that drain farm fields, bring nitrates into our water systems at elevated levels. So we've developed, with the help of Iowa State University and several other groups, new practices such as bioreactors and saturated buffers. Now, these two types of practices can be put underground. They intercept this tile water. They utilize, one of them, the bioreactor utilizes wood chips to remove the nitrates through a sequestration process. And the other one, the saturated buffer, utilizes the same process as a septic system, where the water hits these lateral tile lines and the water is then fed through organic soils, removing the nitrates. So both of these, we go out, we find farmers with tile outlets, we educate them about the practice, and then we have funds to help them pay for it. And we've installed several of them across Polk County. Several of the first ones in the state have been actually put in right around the Polk County area.
So I would assume you have some farmers contacting you. You also reach out to farmers. How do you pick which farmers to talk to and which areas to work on?
Yeah, so myself as a watershed coordinator, what I do, and there's several others of us in Polk County, is for one reason or another, certain watersheds have been selected for priority. Examples would be Walnut Creek, which drains to the Raccoon River right upstream from Des Moines Waterworks. Four Mile Creek, which flows through Ankeny, the east side of Des Moines Pleasant Hill, which is known historically for flooding issues. And these watersheds are selected, and then we target what is the problem in that watershed, and we work upstream to down to fix those issues. So across the metro, we've diagnosed all of these watersheds, and we look at fixing each specific watershed, its specific goals. So there's a lot of people like me actually doing this on a statewide level as well, where we've monitored high pollution issues, and then we're going to go and try and fix that pollution issue, or maybe there's a flooding issue. We're going to try and reduce flooding. But we target the watersheds based on how severe, how many people it affects, and then what is the specific issue.
That sounds great. And so many things that people can get involved with and they can do on their own land, no matter what their situation is. And that's really something that we try to focus on with Plant Grow Fly as well. And that's something that we have partnered with you really since the beginning of our project. Again, you can go on the zoo's website, blankparkzoo.com, and find out everything that you need to know about planting a pollinator garden, including the native plants that our species of insects need the most. These gardens will be great for pollinators of all type, including hummingbirds and butterflies and bees. And it's just a really great synergy with your rain garden program, because you're including some of the same plants that we include in our gardens. Can you talk a little bit more about the effects on pollinators that you have with some of your programs?
Yeah, so like I said, we've been out installing rain gardens for years. We've been out talking people into doing prairies for years. And really, the more I learned about the Blank Park Zoo and their Plant Grow Fly program, I was really excited. One, because it was an angle we'd never even thought of. We're out there, we're promoting natives because of their deep roots, how they can improve water quality. But really, it went hand in hand. We're promoting the exact same species as this Plant Grow Fly, improving pollinator habitats. Nobody wants to see pollinators dying off. And really, what a great way to just reach more people. Because I can tell you, some people, they want a rain garden because they have a wet spot in their yard. Some people want a rain garden because they want to clean up Easter Lake that they live next to. Well, I can tell you, there's more people that also want to do a pollinator garden, a rain garden, because they want to help butterflies and bees. And a great example of this was a few years ago, we worked with a couple that lived right in the heart of downtown Des Moines. They actually lived in a loft downtown, but they wanted a little house that they could have guests when family come to town. So they fixed up this little house just with an eyesight of the skyrise of downtown Des Moines. And they said, well, we want to do rain gardens. So they did three of them in the backyard, two in the front. The whole yard flowed through these rain gardens. And what really stuck out to me, one, it was kind of cool, but in an area full of concrete, full of high density housing, I went there a year later. These rain garden, all these native plants have been growing. And what did I see in the backyard? I saw butterflies everywhere. And it really stuck out to me. As you look through the street, you could not see a bug to save your life. There is nothing. It is desolate. But here in this single house that just decided to do some rain gardens, and to an outside, it just looked like a garden. Pretty flowers. You had no idea, but what are they doing? They're They have no runoff from their house, and they're providing this important pollinator habitat that really, it's just an island in the middle, in a desolate area. But they're coming because the habitat was there. And it really stuck out to me, and I've seen it again and again since then, that no matter how small, it can make a difference, whether you're talking water quality, pollinators. And I've been really excited as I've seen the plant grow fly gardens sprouting up across the state. And I think it's just a great message that can be taken away. It's just another angle to get good things done on the ground.
Exactly. And I think that people come to the table for many different reasons. But when they do install a rain garden or a butterfly garden or pollinator habitat or whatever you want to call it, there's something about butterflies that just really touches people. And something, it's nostalgic seeing many monarchs in their childhood and maybe not seeing so many now. But there's something about butterflies that really gets people excited. And so maybe they didn't put those rain gardens in for butterflies, like you said, but it's going to be something that's so beautiful for them to experience. And for people who are walking by, it's so exciting for kids. And when you have a native plot, there's something to see throughout every different season throughout the year. And it just keeps giving and giving and giving. And so I really do like the synergies between our two projects. So where can people go to find out more information about all these projects? And talk again about if they live outside Polk County, where they should look.
Yeah, so maybe I could spew off lots of websites and Facebook pages, but I think the best place to start is really rainscapingiowa.org. Now, Rainscaping Iowa has kind of been the term that has been coined here in the state of landscaping for rain, for pollinators. So if you go to rainscaping.org, you can find information about all the programs, about all the practices. Say you're like, I want to build a rain garden. Well, where do you start? Starting at this page, you can learn about designing it, learn about the plants that can go in it, and really it's a great resource. And then secondly, I'd probably say looking at Polk Soil and Water Conservation District, feel free to contact us as staff. Our job is to go out and help people build conservation practices. So we do site visits, we help through the whole process. And at the end of the day, my job, I'm graded on how many projects did I get installed on the ground and how well did I improve water quality, how much habitat did I get down. So really, we're always looking for people to work with. So reach out to us and maybe you'll find that you're in a targeted area and you can make a big difference in your own watershed.
Thank you so much, John, for being here. You've given folks a bunch of really practical things that they can do in their own yard. And just remember that there is a direct correlation between how we treat our land, our yards, our environment, and those resources that are available to wildlife. So thank you so much again. Blank Park Zoo is open year-round. You can learn all about the zoo, including information about our animals, special events, previous episodes of this show and more on blankparkzoo.com. And make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel and Facebook pages as well. That's all the time that we have for today. And just please make sure to join us next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.